Welcome to Odd Pod. This week I talked to Scotty McNeese, who keeps himself very busy running a music curating business and his own record label. I went to visit his office at the Co-Prosperity Sphere in Bridgeport this week. So one thing that I always ask people, and I don't know how much you're like a performer these days, like, because you were a drummer for quite a while. You're still a drummer. You didn't stop being a drummer. How did you first like get into music?
Well,
what was your introduction?
Suzuki piano when I was six.
Right. Yeah.
That's where it started, and then fifth grade band, I guess, in my local elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
I actually wanted to play trombone real bad. And then when I went to the rental place to rent my instrument before school or whatever.
They were out because they were so popular.
No, they weren't out. They weren't out. But I walked in, and right when we walked through the door of this place, Paxton Music in Valparaiso, Indiana.
Oh, okay.
I walked through the front door, and there was a fucking full drum set up right there.
Shit.
Well, can I not say fuck in this?
No, you can. You can say whatever you want. I just change it so that people can say whatever they want.
Okay. I'll try not to say fuck too much. Aww. I have a tendency to say fuck a lot. I just said fuck twice in that
You
last
said it
time.
So many times. It's okay. You just broke the seal.
The fuck seal is broken.
Yeah, it's broken.
Fuck seal broken. Okay. From now on, no more of those.
I might slip up.
There was a drum set up right in the front.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, captivated by it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to mess with it so bad. I just wanted to
hit things in rhythm.
Yeah, man. You know, I was an ADHD kid or whatever too.
Oh, okay.
And, like, so drum set was a dream instrument, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, like, they made, I saw that and I wanted that for, like, which it would have cost my mom $1,500, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So instead I walked out of there with the practice pad and the xylophone.
Right, yeah. At least like something small you could like make noise on.
Well, that was like what they give you to start, you know.
Right.
And so I did that for through middle school, and then was kind of like, all right, I hate this, you know, I never liked it. But then like getting into high school and like I remember Napster happened right around then.
Yeah.
And I started downloading music, and I started like learning about music history, getting into like the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin and Smoking Grass. And then I was like, man, I want to play drums. Like all that stuff I did in middle school that I hated in band, like, I want to get back into that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I kind of turned into a hippie kid, you know. And so then my parents were finally willing to buy me a drum set when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was when I got real serious about it. It was like, that's all I wanted to do.
So, yeah.
And I rejoined band my senior year of high school.
Oh, okay.
And I played in all the bands I could.
Yeah. And at what point did you end up in Chicago?
2009.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So I was 25.
Okay.
24, almost 25.
Gotcha. Okay. And there was a point I was like on the Uncanned Music website. I was, you know, under like, you know, the Uncanned Music fam. it's your bio says on there that you're a seasoned drummer who wrote, recorded, and performed with a score of bands in the thousands, 2000s, however you want to say it, while subsidizing his outrageous lifestyle with front of house positions in various restaurants. Can you like what are you talking about? Like first of all, like, why was this, like, an outrageous lifestyle?
I don't know, man. I mean, I got to write my own bio.
Right.
So of course, I wanted to, like, make it sound snazzy or whatever.
Right.
What was outrageous about it? Well, most of the bands I played with back then were, like, punk bands. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of DIY touring.
Yeah.
It wasn't exactly a very, like, stable lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah, man, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't outrageous. Maybe I just like to think of it that way.
But you were, I mean, you were, and then you had sort of like day job type stuff going on.
Yeah,
waited
tables.
Time.
Yeah, okay. And I guess the reason I put that in there is because that company, you know, our clients are restaurants.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted, you know, I'm just wanted people to know that like restaurants have always been part of my life, even though I've always been a musician.
Right.
Like I've been bussing tables, waiting tables, doing that kind of stuff since I was 16, you know.
Yeah.
And
So it does seem like it would make a lot of sense that, like, these two things that have been that were in your life for a long time, like, suddenly sort of came together with Uncanned Music.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And that's why I put it there. I guess subsidizing my outrageous lifestyle. Well, but I guess, yeah. I mean, because, like, I would make money waiting tables, and then I would stock it up, and then I would, you know, I mean, those tours I was going on weren't making me
any
money.
Yeah. Nobody's making money on those tours.
So. I mean, I saved that money. I bought a van. Once I had a van, I was able to, like, take bands on tour and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, there's, I mean, you know, the pay for my main band, my most successful band, our pay was $10 a day. You know, that was our pay. We weren't making shit, you know.
Right.
So that's pretty outrageous, which is ultimately why I burnt out and stopped doing it, you know, because it was outrageous. Like, you can't, it wasn't sustainable. And I, at the time, I was in my early 20s, mid-20s. I had friends who were in their mid-30s, late-30s, at least in the punk circuit, who were doing the same shit still. And they were not, and they looked real burnt out.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, man, you know, no hate on the way they choose to live their life, but
it can be tiring.
I kind of wanted to, like, see what else was possible. Yeah. And so it kind of popped the brakes not long after I moved to Chicago and decided that I didn't want to, like, road dog anymore. And I wanted to, like, see what it would be like to maybe actually maybe finish my degree and maybe get a job. Maybe, I don't know, it was a quarter life crisis or something, you know.
That's fair. It's real.
It's real. Man.
Yeah. And then at what point, what was sort of, can you pinpoint kind of a catalyst for Uncanned Music?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, the whole idea of sort of like music curation for like the hospitality atmosphere, like it's funny because when I think, you know, when I read that you did that, it was something that made a lot of sense to me. And I'm like, of course that's a thing, but it's not something that I ever really thought about.
Yeah. I mean, man. Yeah. I guess it all kind of came together. You know, when I started working seriously in a restaurant full time to pay for my whole living in Chicago, it was right after the last Lawn tour I went on, where that entire tour, the whole time in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm so done with this, you know? And I was enrolling in school. I was going to try and actually do college. And I got a job at this restaurant, and the impetus was that particular place, the environment of that restaurant at that time. It was in 2010. The restaurant scene was like really, the Renaissance was really starting to kick into full gear. I don't know if you know much about the restaurant scene or industry, but especially over the last 10 years, 5 to 10 years, more like 10 years, there's really been like a blooming of like a whole new era of like modern American dining. There's been a restaurant explosion, people opening restaurants like crazy. And it was kind of early on in that, and it was my first experience with it in my life, but it was also culturally, it was kind of like the early part of that movement in Chicago, and it was really exciting. It was like there was really inspiring people opening really inspiring restaurants a lot, and one of them, the one that I worked at, was really like that. There was like everyone that worked there was really passionate about it. There was a lot of creativity. There's a lot of people doing really interesting new things, people trying to develop things. And I kind of got caught up in that energy of like the entrepreneurship of the atmosphere. You know, the person I worked with forward at the time, I was just food running, but the owner of the place, Brendan Sotikoff, he over the course of this period, really became famous for being like an entrepreneur in the restaurant industry.
Oh, okay.
And the atmosphere that he had cultivated in the place at the time was... it was just one where everyone was trying to figure out, like, man, like, what can I do? Like, how can I, like, do something different and new? And like, for me, yeah, that the way that I kind of expressed that was the way I knew how, which was through music, you know? Yeah. And he was really encouraging of it at the time, you know, once he realized that, like, he liked my taste, for one. He identified with what I liked, which was a huge part of it. But he realized that I had ideas and I had the willingness to pursue them. He really encouraged me, first, you know, emotionally and just like with positive reinforcement, and then with money. And that was really what it was for me, was seeing how possible it was, feeling inspired by it, feeling inspired by what I was doing, feeling inspired by what the company I worked for was doing. And, mm-hmm. you know, and over the course of the 2 years I worked for that company, we opened like 4 or 5 incredibly successful restaurants, and, mm-hmm. and music became a bigger and bigger part of them as they went on, because my relationship with the owner got closer and closer. The amount of money I was getting paid got higher and higher. And so that was really the impetus. I think it was a combination of the restaurant industry going through like a renaissance at the time, me kind of having just pulled the net out from under myself and decided that I wasn't going to try and quote unquote make it as a musician, yeah. and then kind of being like, okay, I've got to reinvent myself. Me working for an entrepreneur who was really inspiring and really knew how to encourage you to pursue your ideas and your vision, and money. Like when I started getting paid to do it, it was like, well, yeah, I'll do this. So that would be the impetus, I would say.
Yeah. And so now Uncanned Music, what year did you start it again?
I started the blog in at the beginning of 2012 or the end of 2011. I started a blog. It was just a blog. Well, I knew it was going to be a company eventually, but I started it as a blog while I figured out how the hell you start a company.
Exactly. Right. there are a couple details to work out.
Yeah, totally. And then the official formation of the company was July of 2012.
Okay. And just so what exactly does your company, what kind of services does your company provide?
Uncanned Music started as a playlist for restaurant business. That's still most of what we do, is playlists for restaurants. Custom playlists for whatever that restaurant may want. We also now increasingly are doing sound system design for restaurants and installation.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting in all the speakers and et cetera. And we're also doing acoustic design for restaurants, where we install acoustic treatment soften the space. So, yeah, acoustic sound and music.
Nice.
For restaurants. We're kind of honing that service to be a total sound design, you know, total experiential design through sound.
Okay. Do you have, like, I mean, it's still a relatively, like, young company. Do you have some specific goals for it in the next, say, like, 5 or 10 years?
Man, yeah. I guess the last thing I said, which it's been like piece by piece. We started with just doing the playlist. Then we're like, man, you know, we can do a good playlist, but it's not worth shit unless we have really good sound. And then we got this. Then we started doing sound stuff. And then we're like, man, we can do a great sound system and a great playlist, but it's not that great if the room's noisy as hell, you know?
Right.
So we started getting into acoustics. Okay. So for the next 5 to 10 years, I would just want to keep working down the path of honing what we're able to offer in all those areas. And then ideally, we want to just work with a small but small medium-sized roster of clients who are all of them are hiring us for that entire total install, because some people want to just hire us for playlists now, some people want to just hire us for sound, but some people have done this, and that's what we're working towards, is doing it with everyone. Is they'll hire us to do all three of those things. And those are the places that we do really
covering
really good.
All of your like adjacent.
Those are the places that people walk in. They're like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's like the vibe is thick, and like that's what we know we're capable of providing, and it's just a matter of honing the offering and packaging it in a way that people understand what we're trying to do. You know, it's tough though. You know, we're not like a venture backed company. We've been dogfighting just to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't just like turn down everything, you know.
And in terms of like staffing, you guys are pretty lean.
Yeah. I mean, there's two of us that run the whole thing.
Mm.
And then there's another guy who was originally one of our founding partners, who now lives in Kansas City, and he really just works for the company.
Okay.
Who does playlists. And then there's another guy here that helps us with the sound systems. But other than that, it's really just four of us.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's impressive though.
I mean, we're making a living. We're both broke, and we're both like building up debt every day, you know. But we get to do what we want, and that's the goal. Actually, if you want to know the overarching goal for the next 5 years, is I want to continue doing what I want to do.
Right.
And not just like work wise, but like in life. Like that's the whole point. Is like I want to work a manageable amount of hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say no to some people. Yeah. I want to enjoy my life. I want to focus on my record label, which is a huge point of passion for me,
mm-hmm.
and just be happy and not work myself to death, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good goal. speaking of the label, how did you end up with International Anthem?
I guess for that first place I worked at, like I was telling you, while I was developing the ideas to start on Canned and I was doing playlists for them and I was developing that brand, I also was bartending at that place. And I bartended in this small cocktail bar and we started doing live jazz in there.
Oh, okay.
And so I started getting to know people in the jazz community, getting mm-hmm. inspired by some people's music, and doing like more extended artist residencies as part of my jazz series there, and wanting to record that stuff. And that was when I called David, who's now my ride or die partner in both these businesses. He was living in Southern Illinois at the time, mm-hmm. and he was remotely helping me with playlists for Uncanned. I convinced him to come up and record a show that we did at this bar that I was bartending at, and then when we had the recording and we liked it, we were like, man, let's put this out.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was like, so then from there it all kind of unfolded. So
right.
Basically both of the businesses have kind of been developing in unison for years. It's just Uncanned became a more official business sooner, which happened in July of 2012, and the official formalization of International Anthem wasn't until September 2014.
Right.
But yeah, so.
Yeah.
There it is.
And now, it's like I feel like the label is really picking up steam.
Not that way. I feel that way, and I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah.
You know, the best way to describe the way I differentiate, well, first, because I could, for a while, I was presenting all these shows mm-hmm. as Uncanned Music. It was like Uncanned Music presents.
I see.
This Uncanned Music presents that, all the shows we did with all these artists that we were recording that eventually became the releases. But then it basically, like, we decided to brand them separately, and more or less the differentiation was like, man, Uncanned Music's client work, like, we need to make our clients happy. That's a good product for Uncanned, is what makes the client happy.
Yeah.
Whereas with the label, this is like, yo, we don't really care what you think about this.
We're right.
presenting it this way.
They kind of, because one has more like commercial interest in mind than the,
they're both,
for lack
they
of a
both
better.
Have commercial interest.
That's true.
We want the label to be successful, you know, but we don't have to compromise. We don't have to think about,
right.
you know what I'm saying? We don't have to think about how our taste might apply to some other situation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The label's more just about, it was kind of like we're curators in both senses. We're curating the label, we're curating music for our clients.
Yeah.
But the label is more of a more artistic outlet for us. Whereas the other thing is still creative work, but it's more like the difference between design and art, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Generally, obviously, like, you started the label. Can you describe like your day-to-day involvement with the label? Like in a logistical sense, what are you doing generally?
Sure. Let's see, today I was packing orders right there to ship. some of those are promos that I have to send to different journalists and radio people. I also, just before you got here, was on a phone call with our project manager for our distributor. This morning I read over a contract for a license from a Japanese label for one of our releases. I had a phone call with two of the artists I'm working with for the label about a show we're trying to put together in London.
Mm-hmm.
That was another artist that just called me when we first started talking. Jamie, who's we're working on a show with her as well. We present a lot of shows also as a label, which is not very normal for a label. And we're
right.
also very involved in the production of the releases on our label, because David, my partner, is an engineer.
Yeah.
And most of what we put out, we record ourselves, and we kind of, like, I act as an executive producer on the production.
Uh-huh.
I kind of project manage the release, basically.
Yeah.
That's not normal for a label. So yeah, man. I guess that's so a day to day is
everything. You do everything.
Kind of everything, and we hire out certain things. Like we hire an outside publicist, but really, like that's just to get make sure the record gets serviced properly. And
right.
Really, like in the end, like I'm emailing media myself. I'm pitching stuff for placement myself. So I do a lot of that, emailing various outlets about the records, being like, "Hey, have you heard this yet? We need to do a track premiere, or hey, we want you to do a feature on this, or you whatever."
Yeah.
So that there's that, yeah, and a lot of our packaging is hand assembled. One of the orders that came in today is for this Bambino cassette, which is a pretty meticulous hand assembled package.
Yeah.
So I had to put it together with my hands before I put it in the envelope to ship it.
Yeah.
I did that. What else did I do today?
Do you sleep? Yeah. Do you ever sleep? Okay.
Actually, I sleep really nice.
Man. Oh, good.
Yeah, I had a cool dream last night, actually. Trying to think of what it was. I was like swimming.
Swimming
towards something. It was like I was swimming towards a plate of food.
Were you hungry when you woke up?
No. Yeah. No. There was a dessert, I think. It was a dessert that I wanted.
Oh.
I think Tamika Reid was in my dream too.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that she was in my dream and there was a dessert that I was swimming towards.
Whoa.
I woke up feeling really good, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of things that have to happen. It's cool because I'm real ADD, man, so...
Yeah.
Like I started doing the shipping stuff, didn't finish it, which is fine with me, I don't care. Then I came over here and started doing something. And, like, this thing, I'm ripping all these CDs for a client of ours that we're recording reel-to-reel tapes for Uncanned.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm able to do that with one half of my attention. And then, man, I kind of like having a lot of things going at once, you know.
Yeah.
It's like it's a way for me to not get tired of stuff, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it kind of drives some people in my life crazy a little bit, you know.
Yeah. It's
people that I work with sometimes, maybe not. I don't know. David, my partner, he and I have a really nice fluid working relationship.
Yeah.
Where like we both kind of understand how each other roll, and it doesn't create any stress, you know.
That's ideal.
Yeah. But other people I work with, like some artists, they can't handle the start and stop nature of progress on things, you know.
Do you have any goals moving forward for, well, obviously moving forward, you're not moving backward. a lot of projects that International Anthem does are exciting. Do you have a project in particular coming up that you're excited about?
Yeah, coming up. One of the things that we're finishing is production on this record by Junius Paul, who's a great bass player.
Yeah.
We just had a meeting on Monday to listen back to what the work in progress. Because basically we set up all these shows for him. We did 8 shows last year, and we recorded everything and filmed everything, and then kind of like have been going back over the recordings. Him and Micaiah McRaven have been kind of chopping things a little bit to kind of pare down into the best moments, and then doing a little bit of looping and beat making with the stuff. But I'm really excited about that record, you know, because that's like the way that we prefer to work. Most of our releases we have done where we start to finish, zero to the finish. We manage the production of, and those are the ones that my heart is really. Really, really, truly into. I mean, my heart's into all of it, but like, those are the ones that, like, you know, I feel like I had very much part of or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for that one to come out.
Cool.
Whenever it does, which I don't know when that's going to be. We've got a bunch of things in the works for next year.
Yeah.
I guess I keep thinking if it's already out because we already had the CD release show for it, but the Here and Now, which is Tamika Reid's.
I heard a little bit about that. Man. Yeah.
If you're a cello player, you should listen.
Somebody offered me a free ticket recently to go see Tamika Reid, and I was like, and I was in Springfield, so I couldn't go.
Oh, man.
But yeah, it's like my dream to see her live. She seems like the coolest.
She's pretty excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we have that record. I can give you a copy of the CD. For $12, no. that officially comes out June 2nd, although we just did the CD release show for it last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's really exciting too. And yeah, like this thing I was mentioning earlier that I'm working on, I'm trying to set up this London showcase.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be in Europe anyway for a tour. Junius Paul's going to be in Europe anyway. Jamie Branch is going to be in Europe anyway. And Mekhi McCraven's going to be Europe anyway. So I'm just like trying to think of how...
It's a Europe party.
How can I fit all these pieces together? Yeah. Like one day in London, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, I think the time is right to do something there. We did something in New York last year that it was the same thing. All these people were going to be kind of close to New York at the same time, and I was kind of, like, watching it from afar, like, kind of, like, being like, okay. Like,
yeah.
How can I make something cool happen?
Yeah.
And, I mean, those things have been, like, priceless for, invaluable for our label is doing these kinds of showcases and showing how much, like, our label is a community of artists and not just...
You bring together all these, like, individually super talented people, and you're like,
who are all related in so many ways, and then it all comes back to this Chicago jazz scene, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, but with Here and Now, I'm working on this thing in London, kind of built around their availability, so I'm really excited to see what happens with that. They're such a great band, man. Yeah. I don't know. There's
awesome.
All that stuff's happening.
Do you have any other, like, goals for the label in terms of, like, changing your role in it or, you know, having more artists be a part of it or, you know, anything?
Man, I would like to, I mean, I've been working towards this since I started, I feel like, having a venue.
Oh, yeah.
That would be kind of like a hub for all the activity. I mean, we're promoting usually at least one, sometimes two, sometimes five shows a month through the label where we're doing all the work, organizing and promoting the thing. And we're doing it at various venues. I would love to just concentrate all that energy into one place.
Yeah.
And like, and I think that more new ideas for records, more artists, that we'll be able to have a more direct means of meeting and getting to know artists who are a good fit philosophically for what we're trying to do as a label, you know, to have a whole place to grow that whole thing. I think of the label, even without the venue space, I think of a big goal of the label is building community,
you know,
building a community of people around ideas and around, you know, building a diverse community of people around ideas. And I think with a venue, it's like, that is the most tangible way to actually really do that, you know? So that's a big goal. This space here, one of the reasons I moved into this space is because they're working towards getting a venue license here.
Oh, okay.
So ideally in the next few months or year, we'll start programming here for starters. So we'll see how that goes, you know. But yeah, man, I don't know.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's all exciting, you know. Yeah. I mean, I definitely want to do it on the south side. I know that.
Mm-hmm. There's plenty going on the north side already.
Yeah, that's,
so.
that's totally how I feel. There's not enough happening down here.
Yeah.
This just feels like the place, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool.
Yeah, there's that. And
is there anything else you want to tell me about your life? Your dreams?
My dreams.
Your feelings? Your tea?
My tea? I mean, part of the idea for the venue is for it to be a tea house.
Really?
I like tea a lot.
Oh.
I really like tea. I want it to be, this is the idea. Venue, music venue, music school, tea house, sauna. And maybe also Ethiopian restaurant.
Okay.
That's what I'm all about. Hey, why not? Why
that
not?
Sounds awesome.
Why not? Why not?
It might have to be more of like a compound than like a single building. As long as you're like fine with that.
What does venue mean? How does the word actually break down? What's like what is it? Meeting place? Is that what that really means?
Probably.
I think that's what it means.
That sounds right.
Whatever, like the Latin.
Or probably like a place that people come to. It's probably that simple. I mean, if you think about like the
doesn't
French
say anything
word, like,
about
veneer,
music in there,
you know?
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Venue, so place where people come to.
And you're wanting to build a community. Just build a community
like, oh,
of tea
like
lovers
Ethiopian
and Ethiopian
food. You like Ethiopian food? Come on down. Oh, you're also going to hear this amazing music that you didn't
and
know.
Then
oh, you
go
love amazing
in the
music?
Sauna.
Oh, check it out. Yeah, you look like you need to relax before you hear any of this music.
Take your tea in the sauna.
Take your tea in the sauna. Relax. Shower.
Shower.
Come back to the show.
But shower first.
Or
please.
go into our garden. garden sauna.
Oh.
Large scale garden sauna.
Okay.
With a stage in the middle of it and be entertained while you sweat.
Whoa.
And drink tea. I'm talking like delicious, rare, cave-aged teas.
Oh, my God.
Now go out and eat some Ethiopian food.
Now, that's an experience. That's a complete
experience. You
want to
take some music
experience.
Lessons? Come back tomorrow time.
Can it be 11? Let's make it 11. I feel like that's more realistic after people
have
been seeing it.
There can be an early bird class, and
show.
There can be a late morning class.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm on board. Just let me know when you're taking investors. Obviously, I'm just...
Give me all your money. Just,
yeah, all of my dollars. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this and
sure.
sitting down and talking with me about your hopes and dreams and great projects and adventures.
Sure.
Thanks so much for listening. This is episode 9, by the way, which means there's only one more episode before OddPod goes on a little break. Keep your eyes peeled for updates on the OddPod Facebook page or on Twitter. And that handle on Twitter, by the way, is @OddPodChai. That's @OddPodChai.